This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Medical marijuana will soon be legal in the state of Ohio. A review of the UC Police Department and an audit of the Metropolitan Sewer District have just been released, and work continues on Cincinnati's budget. Joining us to discuss these and other stories affecting the tri-state are Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wetterick, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider reporter Lucy May, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like to join the conversation. And Lucy, Chris, and Jay, thanks for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So, Governor Kasich
said that in unison.
We had somebody one time say jinx. So we have Governor Kasich. He's now signed Ohio House Bill 523, and this is the bill that's going to authorize the use of medical marijuana for medical purposes, and it also establishes the medical marijuana control program in Ohio. So, Jay, how long before this takes effect?
Well, I think from the reporting we've had from our state house folks, part of it will take effect in September, but there's also an awful lot we don't know yet. With any time a new piece of legislation is passed, well, you've got the law that sets the framework. You actually have to have the policymakers who write the rules for it. And from the sound of it, that rulemaking is going to take some time. And I think one of our state house reports indicated yesterday that as far as producing and actually buying medical marijuana in the state, it could be even the end of next year.
So for the time being, once this actually does go into effect, I think it's September.
September, you probably
you could buy out of state.
You could buy out of state and bring it back legally. But I think as far as, you know, being able to, you know, to purchase, from what I'm hearing, to be able to buy in the state or produce it in the state, that could take some more time and maybe is like the end of 2017.
So we don't have the rules. We don't have the infrastructure in place yet.
But we have the bill. But that's the legislation has passed. It's been signed into law, and now we will wait for the rules to be written. But that's not uncommon.
Of course, and Lucy, I guess during this 90-day period, it gives localities a chance to get ready for this.
Right. Cities and towns could move to ban dispensaries or limit the number of them. And, you know, there's also the whole question of the dispensaries themselves and how it will be cultivated and how it will be grown locally. So there is a lot of gray area in all this.
You know, and I understand, too, Ohio, you still won't legally be permitted to use it by smoking. What the bill says is that medical marijuana products will have to be vaporized, and then they have to be derived from plants by approved sources, and they have to have a THC content of less than 70%. So as Jay was saying, there's still a lot to be sorted out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that you could envision a scenario where someone gets busted with pot that they're not supposed to have, and then they'll claim, well, this is for medicinal use. Mm-hmm. The investigations could be just a little bit more complicated.
Well, and I guess licensed cultivators and processors and dispensaries and testing laboratories, none of that can be within 500 feet of schools, churches, or public libraries or playgrounds and parks. So there are going to be some limitations for all those facilities, too.
Chris, we had a couple ballot proposals that were out there about legalizing. I think one was for medical marijuana, one was for legalization across the board.
Right.
So what happens with those proposals?
You know, this, you know, part of me wonders whether by the time they get this sorted out, this law sorted out that they just passed, whether we won't see another ballot issue trying to legalize marijuana that tries to learn from the lessons of the defeated ballot issue they ran before voters in 2015. The folks who were involved in that, I think, have said that they're going to, you know, they're going to give it another shot down the road. They'll have to do it differently. You know, you probably remember, Mark, that the last ballot issue that tried for full legalization, they set up these various sites throughout the state, and there were investors in each of them, some very prominent people, including some members of the Taft family. I believe Frank Wood was one of them, and some other prominent Cincinnatians. And, you know, they basically set this up so that those folks would make a bundle on the wholesale distribution of those to the hundreds or maybe even thousands of stores that would pop up across the state. You know, they may end up going for just a straight legalization vote without, you know, without some of that framework, because now the Constitution, of course, has been amended to prevent using the Constitution to set up monopolies, which was what the opponents of that ballot issue, you know, ended up charging. So I think the movement nationwide on legalizing this drug is, you know, pretty strong, and it's only really a matter of time before, you know, we see states like Ohio ended up legalizing this drug.
So you think we might actually see some of these groups, particularly the ones that would like it legalized across the board, pop up again in the future?
Yeah, I would totally expect that, just because, you know, I think there's a strong, you know, kind of backlash against some of the law enforcement policies we've seen, where you know, you have a lot of people who have been, you know, have criminal records because they've either used or sold marijuana, and I think the country is kind of coming around to the viewpoint that maybe that's not the best use of law enforcement resources. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a new ballot issue sometime soon on that.
And I think clearly Ohio lawmakers are trying to get out in front, because they would much prefer to have it in the Ohio Revised Code as opposed to the Ohio Constitution, because once it's in the Constitution,
they can't take it out unless the voters agree.
The only way that it comes out is if the voters say take it out. Where the Ohio Revised Code, if something doesn't go right, they can amend the law to reflect any changes.
Well, not to mention under the new law, that they'll have a medical marijuana advisory committee that will be developing the regulations and recommendations, and they'll also have the program regulated by the Ohio Department of Commerce, the State Medical Board, the Board of Pharmacy. They're all going to play a role in this. So like you were saying, Jay, they wanted to get out ahead of this and have a measure of control over it that they might not have otherwise had.
I think even if we see that legalization campaign come back, though, one thing we won't see is Buddy the mascot. So anybody who really misses Buddy, sorry. Hope you bought your T-shirt last time. Yeah,
that was some parts of that campaign were not well thought about. And Buddy would be a part of it.
But we do kind of miss Buddy. So,
you know, the thing about medical marijuana, too, I feel like Ohio is kind of really behind, you know, and particularly the coastal states where this is kind of standard procedure, and they have medical marijuana, I believe, in Illinois as well. You know, that the legislature is late to the game, and I think they saw the writing on the wall that people's attitudes about it have changed.
So again, this takes effect on September 6th. Is that correct, Jay? Is that
it? Would be 90 days from whenever the governor signed it. So I believe he signed it
a couple days ago.
So, yeah, it'll be. But if it was June, it's either the 8th or the 9th of September that it would take effect.
Okay, moving on to something else. We had an audit of the Metropolitan Sewer District that was released this week. So, Jay, you have the whole report sitting in front of you.
You nixed my idea. I was going to read it word for word, but you thought that might be boring.
It's only 50 pages, single spaced.
Yeah, first off, kind of go into a little background on this, Jay. What prompted the audit investigation in the first place?
A lot of this was. And give credit where credit is due. The Cincinnati Enquirer had done an expose on a 2007 memo that then city manager Milton Dehoney wrote to then MS – I love all this – then MSD director
– Nobody's there anymore.
Tony Parrott. And basically at the time, city manager Dehoney had given MSD director Parrott the ability to sign off on contracts, major contracts, without any higher level of review.
So no oversight, no accountability.
No checks and balances. And there were some questions about some of the spending, and that's what this audit was to look at, was the past management practices of MSD and the procurement policies of MSD. And I think those both figured heavily in the audit that we got back. One thing I was surprised I know Mayor Cranley had told the Enquirer before the audit came out that it was going to be brutal.
Yeah.
And after I read it, it really wasn't as brutal as I thought it could be. And I'm almost wondering if, because of the time pressures to get the audit out, because we were led to believe that there were going to be basically names named.
Right.
There were very few names in the report. And I'm wondering if they thought, let's get this thing out there. We'll leave the names out and leave that to somebody else to investigate down the road.
You know, there's a lot of pressure not only by the Enquirer, but also Councilman Kevin Flynn to get this report out. They had it in the hands of the city's attorneys, and you know, once it was there, it was being reviewed. That looked suspicious to some people, and so the press conference on was it Monday or Tuesday?
Tuesday.
You know, it seemed like once you read the report and heard the press conference, it did seem to me like you know, in response to some of that pressure, because in an audit, you do name names, and then you do let those people respond, and none of that was really in there. So I think that's a factor here. You know, there were a lot of interesting things in the report. Not a lot of them hadn't been reported before. And I think the most interesting thing out of the whole week on this was that Prosecutor Joe Dieters came out and said that he would not be following up on the report because the federal law enforcement officials were taking a look at it. And we've heard this, you know, a couple of different
times. That's been reported in several places.
That the FBI has taken a look at it. And I've done some reporting on that, and so has WCPO. And, you know, when I – basically, you know, you're talking about a very bureaucratic, very, you know, it's an organization where if you were to investigate it, you would have to really sort through a lot of documents. You would have to dig into, you know, a pile of memos and emails and take a deep swim into them. And the puzzling thing about this allegation that there's an FBI investigation is that the city has not received a subpoena from the FBI or from anybody in the federal government for anything out of the MSD. And they will – the only thing that City Manager Black has said has happened related to federal law enforcement is that there was an employee that had been interviewed last summer about items of a generic nature is how he put it to me. Didn't get any more specific than that, but it was related to MSD, and that's all they know. So it's – you know, I think in both CPO's reporting and my own, you know, we had a lot of outside experts talk about this, people who have either been FBI agents or federal prosecutors or whatever. And, you know, they've said, you know, that's something they would probably try to do is to take a look at documents. So if they are doing that, they're getting the documents in another way than going to the city and asking for them or pulling up a truck and taking them out, which is kind of what you typically see. So I think this whole FBI investigation is kind of a, you know, it's puzzling to see, you know, what is actually going on there.
But Prosecutor Joe Dieters in the meantime says he'll defer
right
to the FBI investigations and wait and see what they come up with.
Absolutely.
Well, it could also take a real long time. My colleague Paula Christian wrote a story that posted on our website this morning that it can take as long as 5 years to complete an investigation like this. So it's very slow going when the federal investigators get involved in something like this.
You would think that they would try to grab those documents before somebody threw them in the trash or shredded them or whatever. And maybe they found a way to do it without sending the city a subpoena or MSD a subpoena. But it's very and the folks that I talked to who had been in federal law enforcement said there's different degrees of these investigations, right? So, you know, you get a report like this, it's referred over. You know, it's clear that a lot of these allegations have been floating out there for several 6 to 8, you know, maybe a year. But one of the things that the former FBI agent that I talked to, who was based out of California, said was they would want to get to people early and they would want to talk to them early before this thing really got rolling and was well known in the media, which it is now. So, you know, I wonder, you know, I wonder if it'll take 5 years. I wonder if it'll take, you know, whatever, if they're wrapping up now. And I wonder if we'll ever know what they, you know, what they found.
And I guess for us in the press, basically what the city audit did was basically ask more questions that were then were answered.
Right.
So that guarantees that this is going to continue for
months. So it's not really a series of recommendations.
No.
Okay.
Well, there are recommendations, but it's also not a conclusion to some outstanding questions. I think it was the section on the – there was a foundation, a 501c3 foundation that MSD – set up to manage its
right.
summer intern academy and also its job training program that had the MSD director, assistant director, and I believe a superintendent as board members.
Right.
And most of the if there were calls for this to be referred to the Ohio Ethics Commission for further investigation, it largely centered on that piece of the mm-hmm. that foundation, because was it appropriate for city employees to be going to contractors who do business with the city to basically ask them to make charitable donations to this foundation? And that's why a large part of the report talks about in that section that be referred to the Ohio Ethics Commission for further review.
Yeah, that was one of the really troubling things in the report. And there, another one was that it looked troubling, which was that they had, instead of hiring a bunch of new city employees when they had to ramp up their overhaul of MSD, which is going to cost $3.4 billion, you know, instead of hiring a bunch of new city employees to do that, they hired a bunch of contractors, and those contractors ended up managing city employees and writing reviews in some cases. And when they looked for additional work or looked for additional contractors to do work, those contractors would basically be involved in the hiring of that. Now, Tony Parrott, the MSD director, had to sign off on all that stuff, but You know, this is stuff that, you know, that is kind of troubling, and it'll be interesting to see what the Ethics Commission does, if anything. And we've got to remember there's an auditor's investigation at the state level as well.
What about the contractors themselves? Any chances that any of them could be held accountable for anything?
Yeah, it's not clear. To me, the way the report read was it wasn't so much the fact that the MSD itself that set up this system, and it wasn't really that the contractors had done anything wrong. I mean, Jay, I don't know if you read it that way or not.
I know, but that's the sense that I got. Basically, it was bad policy on the city's part,
yeah.
But I'm not sure that they did anything unless it were to be proven that somehow in the investigation that they were paid for work that they didn't do.
They were ghost payrollers, basically.
But I think some of those.
But you're not reading that into anything
said. And I think in some situations, I'm not going to name a name, so I don't want to get in trouble. But I mean, the information was so vague that it would be hard to say whether he did or didn't.
Yeah.
Do that work.
I know that they seemed like they weren't satisfied with some of the work product. You know, another interesting thing about it was, you know, they had. You know, they did have some names. They had the former city manager's name. They had the former MSD director. They had the former mayor, Mark Mallory, in it. The whole thing to me has at times struck me as there being a little bit of political, you know, covering their behinds. You know, there's kind of an underlying struggle beneath some of this allegations of corruption back and forth. You know, I think the county would like to have more control over MSD. I think that the current city manager and mayor would like to basically pin responsibility on the former mayor and the former city manager. So I see a lot of that swirling around, and I would be curious to like separate what's real and what's related to that as well.
Well, that brings up an interesting point because the county actually owns MSD.
Yeah, the
city operates right.
That's a point
where I'm headed.
That's a point of contention.
They have a legal issue going over this whole thing right now.
Yeah, the city will maintain. And I'm not a lawyer, so I'm going to say that straight up front. But from what I understand, under Ohio law, the only entity that can set up a sewer district is a county.
Right.
So MSD is a county sewer district. And basically the city of Cincinnati in 1968 brought its assets to the county's sewer district. But the city claims that its document when it did that back in 1968 says that it still retains ownership of any of the assets that it brought to the agreement in 1968. And that's a significant part
of MSD. this argument's going through the courts
yes.
right now.
Yes.
And they're having like a mediation before Judge Michael Barrett.
And this will not I think Kevin Flynn has said, you know, everybody calls that the county and city are going through a divorce concerning MSD. Well, you can call it a divorce, but I really don't think they're going to be able to necessarily get divorced. There will probably be some sort of legal separation, perhaps. But most of the entity that's now MSD is probably going to remain in place. It's just a matter of who's in control.
One question I asked the city manager at this press conference where they announced this audit was, okay, so did any of the conduct that we see in this report, did that lead to a rate increase that could have not happened, that could have rescinded? Would this work have cost any less money? And the answer was kind of like, I don't know. I mean, there were enough bad practices that made them concerned about it. But, you know, one of the key questions to me is, you know, did anybody steal any money, and would our rates be any less based on what's in the report? Because you have a lot of stuff in there about, well, they used master service agreements, which were they bid them out at one point, but then kept using those contracts later and later when possibly, at least in the opinion of the auditors, they should have rebid them. That's a lot of kind of bureaucratic mumbo jumbo that I think goes over people's heads. And I think
one part of the problem too, Chris, is you're talking about sewers, which everybody just goes, what? Sewers?
Yeah. And I think the core question is, are our rates higher than they should be? And I don't think anybody really has the answer to that question. And this is that's why this is important, is because this is a huge project, $3.4 billion. It's like we're building four Paul Brown stadiums right now as a result of the changes that need to be made to make our sewage discharge more environmentally acceptable to the federal government.
And I'm not sure, maybe I missed this in the previous reporting, but one thing that was in the audit that I hadn't heard about was the property acquisition piece.
Yeah, that was new.
And essentially that involves the – I'll get the name right – the Lick Run Conveyance Project, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do that, there's a certain number of properties that MSD has to buy for that project to work. And Chris, stop me if I get this wrong, but they had
– they had third-party people doing the buying of this property.
They had a third-party – a consultant, an outside lawyer buying these properties or taking options to buy these properties, but they never identified that MSD was the eventual buyer. And that may have violated federal
– procurement.
It has a long name, uniform something or other.
It's basically federal rules on buying stuff is really the way to think about
it. And part of me wonders if that's maybe what the FBI is looking at.
That and that's I think the core reason the federal government would look at this is because they have if they have violated federal law. I mean,
so there's a possibility of criminal charges then.
I don't know. I mean, that's the question. You know, I don't think the federal government much cares whether they followed city procurement rules, which seems to be a big point of contention in the report.
But that piece on the property acquisition, the carrot and stick with that is if they violated that uniform, whatever the long name of it is, yeah. It could affect federal grant dollars for any of these projects, and that could be huge.
And they are trying to go back and clean that up. And I wish I'd asked a question as to, well, how are you doing that? Are you going back and telling the people who sold their property that, oh yeah, we're taking this from MSD, and does that fix the problem if you do that? I'm not sure.
And Lucy, I think as Chris was pointing out, this is one of those stories that's important because don't you think this fuels public distrust of how the government is spending taxpayer dollars?
Yeah, I think so. And even though there were some other things in the report I didn't write about it, but my colleagues did, that talked about nepotism and whether former director Tony Parrott actually lived in the city as he was supposed to, and some of those things. They're not, as Chris said, they don't affect sewer rates, but they do affect people's trust in government and how government operates, and faith in whether people are following the rules. And I wonder, you all obviously read this report. I didn't. But is there anything in there that you think could be leading to a public corruption investigation by the feds? Because that's something that they get pretty interested in, too, if they think there's, a possibility of some kind of public corruption.
I don't really know. But it struck me that when we asked, did the former director, Tony Parrott, cooperate with the audit? They said that he did, basically. And if he had... I'm sure he's – I don't know. I mean, if I were him, I would have consulted a lawyer before doing that.
And one thing, if Mark asked about criminal charges, now that one was one that they did Parrott's residency question. They did recommend that it be – that the law department – the city's law department consider hiring an outside firm to review. I think it's a given that Tony Parrott did not live in the city, and the question is, did he falsify documents to say that he was in fact living in the city? And that could be, I don't know that that's going to be a serious charge, but it could be something that could be investigated and lead to some sort of criminal charge.
Jay, correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't the acting city manager, Scott Stiles, discipline him?
He lost, I think it was like, they took away 40 hours of vacation time from him. And then, as a matter of fact, right before he left to go to Louisville, council actually passed a waiver so that he could live in Warren County.
Was that discipline because he had lied? I thought it was.
Yes, it was.
So, I mean, it's well established that he didn't live in the city and lied about it, I thought. Yeah.
And one of the other things, too, and I think you had this in the article that you wrote, Chris, that they talked about the there was a lack of oversight that the report found, and also extraordinary use of consultants.
Yeah. There's an interesting issue here because, the city – this is a massively complicated project, and the city had deadlines to meet. And so the officials that were there at the time would tell you, well, that's why we hired these consultants, was to get this – to get this up and running quickly, and also because we didn't necessarily have the expertise on staff, and also because while we need that expertise during the project – we may not need it in 10 years, and so that was the reason they used so many consultants.
And I think they also pointed out that at the time this was all starting, the city had a hiring freeze.
That's true. I forgot about that, yeah. But the auditors said, and the auditors, by the way, was former assistant city manager Bill Moeller and another guy named Jim Getz, who is on the city's audit commission. They said that, yeah, we understand that. We understand the reason they did, they did hire so many consultants, but we think it was even beyond a reasonable, it was extraordinary in the sense that it was way more than we thought, would be normally necessary, even with a project of this size.
Charles in Blue Ash joins us now. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Listen, kudos to everybody who's done the investigation on the MSD. So I want to start from that point. But I do think what you could do is try to find some samples of some demographic lines about who's been affected in terms of rate increases. Most people don't read the sewer part of the bill.
They read the water part.
They read the water part. And I think a lot of people don't even realize. And I've seen indications where maybe it's almost 50 to 100% increases. Whether that's true or not across the board, you know, I can't say for sure. But I do think you can go to churches or other social service groups and see if they can get people to volunteer to let people look at their bills. And at least it's a human face of who's being suffering.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think a lot of people, you know, the city's water rates have gone up as well, but not as steeply as the MSD rates. And because they are on the same bill, a lot of people associate these rate increases with the water department, and they don't even realize it's MSD.
Well, and this is not as much as you'd like to think that it's a Cincinnati issue. This is an issue nationwide. I have a cousin that lives in Atlanta, and they're going through the same thing with the update to whatever their version of the MSD is for the Atlanta area, and their sewer rates have skyrocketed as well because everyone is under these federal consent decrees to stop the sewer overflows into streams and rivers.
This is a really interesting issue because of that, because, you know, these older cities like Cincinnati, you know, East Coast, you know, over to here maybe, they're really getting hammered by these regulations. And, you know, cities out west that might not have these type of sewer systems that don't, or that don't separate the stuff that comes from your toilet from this, from the rainwater, they're not probably being hit as financially as much as we are. And, you know, I wonder if there's kind of an inherent unfairness about that, because it really, you know, after a while, these increases really hit the economy and take money out of people's pockets that they could be spending otherwise.
So where does this head next?
More investigations.
How many years down the road, as Lucy was saying, will it take before we get there?
I honestly, depending on how far it gets into the federal court, at least on the breakup question, there will be something happen, we know, by April or May of 2018. Now, could that be something that is settled sooner than the deadline, or is that going to be one of those where they're stopping the clock at midnight on whatever day that it expires so that it doesn't expire? We're guaranteed something through at least 2018. And if Lucy's correct that these investigations can take four or five years, it could be ongoing. The other thing I think funny is too is you hear the commissioners and Mayor Cranley talk about how well they're all communicating about, and it seems like they're seemingly getting along. But then you read their court filings, and while they may talk nice about each other, if you read the court filings don't seem to be as cordial as what they're saying about each other in public.
Yeah, they're pretty venomous. I mean, they're pretty the lawyers are using artful language that people would actually understand, which is surprising, these court filings. I've read pretty much all of them.
Lawyers are so rarely paid to talk nice, though.
Right, right. I mean, as far as the project goes, but it's more than a decade away from being finished, and they got another phase they have to start planning pretty soon. And that's why this, you know, divorce or conjoined twin situation with the city and the county is so important, because they do need to get kicking on the next phase.
We will continue our weekly review of local news, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and joining us to discuss the stories affecting the tri-state this week, Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wederick, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider reporter Lucy May, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman. Lucy, part of an I-Team report, you were looking into how much the city, how much of city tax funding the Cincinnati Park Board spent on building the most recent phase of Smale Riverfront Park, and how much of that money actually went to businesses that were owned by women or minorities.
Right.
So what got you looking into that?
Yes, well, continuing our theme of talking about very complicated city stuff, like Jay said, credit where credit's due. The Inquirer had a number of reports on the Park Board and the Park Board Foundation several months ago. And what we wanted to look at was really how some of these dollars were spent and the kinds of companies that got these contracts. This relates back to the whole master service agreement kind of situation. These are agreements that lots of city departments use to get things done quickly. And the park board and its leadership, they've argued, well, we use these master service agreements because there was pressure to finish this latest phase of Smale Riverfront Park before the big All-Star game and all our visitors came to visit last summer. So we wanted to look at, okay, well, how did that break down? Now, the thing that makes this even more complicated, as if it weren't complicated enough, is that at the time this phase of Smale Park was being built, the city did not have a program that required spending with women and minority-owned companies. It was a small business enterprise program. It was race and gender neutral. And by that standard, the park board actually did very well. They had a large portion of spending on this latest phase of the park that went to small business enterprises. But just as the city as a whole has seen this pattern, the vast majority of that money went to companies, small businesses owned by white men. And a very small percentage that we could find, less than 2%, went to any companies owned by women or minorities. And that's what we looked at. Not, we weren't saying that they broke any rules or that they violated the city's program, because at the time the program was race and gender neutral. But it was also happening at a time that there was lots of conversation from the mayor, especially about the importance of increased spending with women and minority-owned companies. We wanted to look at, okay, how did it shake out for this phase of Smale Park?
And that was 2% out of how much was it? $16 million total?
About $16 million in city funding. Again, like this gets super complicated. So that was the city funding portion of this particular phase of Smale Park. But yeah, it was less than 2%. So the it was just a very small fraction. And we talked to one business owner in town, an African-American business owner, who said, you know, it's just frustrating because his point was because these MSAs were used, the contracts were not bid as openly as they typically are. So when they're bid more openly, lots of different kinds of companies sort of get a shot at trying to get the work. And now you can argue whether the bidding is always on a level playing field and all that. And that argument's been going on for years within the city and all over the place. But they weren't bid the same way because of these master service agreements. He argued that kind of locked some folks out of this work. But the mayor stood up for the park board in our story and said, look, the thing is, we had a different program at the time. It was race and gender neutral. They did well by those standards. And now that whole system has changed, as I think all of us have written and reported on. And so people are expecting those numbers will be better once the reports come out on these new systems that the city has in place. But at least for this last phase of Smale Riverfront Park, the most recent phase, the spending with women and minority companies was very, very low.
And I think the master service agreements, and also I think the companion is professional service agreements. Yeah. We're probably going to hear a lot more about that. And you can see to some extent where those are necessary, because they're meant for simple things, like if you have a master plumbing contract, right, so that if one of the park buildings needs a new toilet installed, yeah, rather than
it's each, for expediency,
right,
say,
rather than each time you need to have a toilet installed, you don't have to bid it out.
Right, a light bulb burns out. You don't have to bid on every light bulb.
Or some simple construction, maybe like pouring a replacement piece of a sidewalk, but that does not include in building an entire park full of sidewalks.
Right. You're right. For expediency's sake, smaller projects like that makes sense. But when you talk about broader, larger, more complicated projects, does it make sense?
And the park board talked about this, I believe it was the Budget and Finance Committee. And they sort of used the argument that in some ways goes back to MSD. Those were the city's procurement rules
At the time.
Yeah, and everybody else was doing it.
And they were following, it was being authorized. They were doing what the rules said that they could do.
If I could express some sympathy for the devil, sympathy for the bureaucrats here. I mean, the public really responds to politicians who talk about, well, I want my city to run like a business. I want it to be quick and agile and whatnot. And these master service agreements, which have become so scandalous, were one way to do it. And I guess maybe there's a middle ground, but, one second you're telling them operate like a business, be fast. And the next you're saying, well, we want this bid out in such a broad way, and we want it, procured in a manner in which everybody gets a shot, and we want it procured in a way that, that we get the lowest price. And, you can't have all of that. You can't have cities operating like businesses, but also, you know, doing the things that we're talking about here.
And clearly right now we're seeing both ends of the spectrum. Under right. the previous administration, things were probably too loose. And again, you can almost understand that too, where I think the city has, what, 13, 14, 15 departments.
Right.
If every time someone wants to buy a light bulb, they have to go through a process and have it approved by a central purchasing department.
People hate that
stuff. You never get anything done.
And it takes time. And I think the shift was under the previous administration, the departments had more power to do that themselves. Now it's completely shifted because of all the problems in the previous administration. It shifted to the other end, where even I think Harry Black said during the MSD press conference, they're micromanaging purchasing. And
he's used that phrase repeatedly.
Yeah. And they're going to do that. And he even said they're going to do that for some time.
Lucy?
And I think, I might be the only one who's really interested in this because I'm such a nerd about this stuff. But in reporting this story, I had this detailed conversation with Thomas Corey, who's the new director of the Department of Economic Inclusion at the city, and about how the MSA, or the Master Service Agreement, process has changed within the city. And, you know, under the old rules and before the, you know, problems came to light with MSD and the park board and all these other things, MSAs would be awarded and different departments might all be using, even if, you know, in some of these agreements, five different companies can be part of the MSA. So you can buy your light bulbs from five different people. But for whatever reason, every city department was using the same guy. So even though you're, you know, Smith's light bulbs, you're never getting any work because everybody's using Jones's light bulbs. And by kind of taking control of that again, the city manager is kind of looking for patterns to see if anybody's excluded. Because the thing that's interesting, I mean, I've interviewed minority-owned companies that have these master service agreements before, and they think, oh, I've got this master service agreement. This is going to be great. I'm going to get all this work from the city. And then they don't get anything. They don't understand it. And I'm not saying that there's anything nefarious going on there, but people work with who they're comfortable with and people they've worked with before. And now by bringing control of this under the city manager's office and a committee that they've put in place, they can look for those patterns and say, hey, how come we're buying all of our light bulbs from Jones? Why isn't Smith getting any of the light bulb business? And to your point, Chris, this whole run government like a business thing, I get that. You know, I was a business reporter, probably the worst business reporter of the business career for many, many years.
Our editors would disagree with that.
I was a business reporter. But the thing that's different is that taxpayer dollars fuel the government. And I don't think it's unreasonable for taxpayers to wonder, are all taxpayers going to get a fair shot at getting some of their money funneling back into their businesses? And businesses aren't like that. You know, they're not taxpayers. They've got to win their money through a product or transaction. And government, if you want your toilet to flush, you got to pay those bills. And that's taxes.
Lucy, do you have any plans to follow up on this story at this point?
Yes, we will be following up on this. Yes. I don't want to go into too much boring detail. But yes, we will.
And if you've not had enough audits, there is an audit underway of the Parks Board and Parks Foundation, and which will be someone said that it might be out by the end of this month, but I get the idea that it's probably going to be sometime in July.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see what that covers, because there's so many different, like we've talked about, this is so complicated.
If you thought MSD was complicated.
Wonky. There are different pieces of this. And, you know, the people who are running these departments have come under fire, but they've also been getting stuff done. So I think there's some tension there in terms of the politics. Yeah. City Council is very supportive of the park board and kind of
that's one
the
of the
results.
Things the park board would point out. They would say, look, we got Smale Park built. It's great. It's everything's going fine. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right about that.
I back up to 30,000 feet on this. You know, the park board for so long has been run by these titans of Cincinnati business. The board by 4th Street. And, you know, you just see that in the
or
way
their
that
their wives.
Yeah, or the wives. I didn't, yeah. and it strikes me that, and the other kind of scandalous things that are so-called scandalous things that have happened, you know, Willie Carden's bonuses and whatnot. That's the way the private sector operates. They do want to use the guy they know. They want to use the guy that did great work for them last time. And, you know, they want to reward their leaders like Willie Carden with, you know, with fair and just compensation, as they would put it. Some of us would think it's extravagant. But, you know, I think there's a whole lot of that in the culture, the way that the park board has run that has come up, you know, come under fire. And Smale Riverfront Park, I mean, I was down there with my friend and her friend and their kid, and boy, it is just a vibrant place. Children love it. I mean, it's like our own Millennium Park in Chicago. It's an extraordinary place, and I don't think anybody can debate the success of what they've built down there.
We will continue our review of the news, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to review the stories affecting the tri-state this week, Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wederick, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider reporter Lucy May, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at WVXU.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Jay, do we have a budget yet?
No, but if they hold to the schedule, we could have a budget on June the 22nd.
June the 22nd for the city of Cincinnati.
That'd be early, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Actually, it could be. The original date was June the 15th, but they kind of, some of the council members complained that they were being rushed, so they pushed it back to the 22nd. But the public hearings are complete. There were three public hearings, and I was surprised they were well attended.
What kind of reaction were they getting at the public hearings?
Actually, it was more support for, I would say, if you had to class one thing that got the most comment was the various neighborhood projects that Mayor Cranley inserted into the budget. Wasson Way, the projects in Avondale, North Avondale, Westwood, College Hill. And there were some requests for things that people want funded, but by and large, most of the comments were supportive of the changes that the mayor had made. So with the public hearings done now, it falls to council members to submit their ideas for changes to the budget and finance chairman, Charlie Winburn. Those are due, I think, at noon on Tuesday. And then toward the end of next week, the first part of the following week, I'm sure that council members and their aides will be huddling and decide what gets funded and what doesn't get funded. One council member told me, and I think I tend to agree, this is not going to be a contentious budget where it's going to be a 5-4 vote. There may be some contentious items that may be separated out for individual votes, but I could see this maybe some parts of it could pass 9-0. There might be some, 7-2, 5-3 or 5-4, 6-3, something like that. But I don't think this is going to be where there's going to be wringing their hands until the last minute to come up with a final budget agreement.
How big is this budget, and how's it compared to previous years, at least in its initial form?
Altogether, I think it's like $1.5 billion, and that's like generally, I think that's about 1.2 for the what they call the general and restricted funds budget, and then there's like another $466 million that's added on for capital projects.
Yeah, I don't have that at my fingertips, but it sounds about it. It's above a billion. I know
yes.
That. one thing that's different about this year is last year you had the five Democrats on the 9-member council try to basically take control of it, try to make changes on their own. That coalition collapsed when Vice Mayor David Mann decided that he didn't want to have an adversarial situation with the mayor, and so they ended up, he and the conservative four members of council ended up basically going along with the mayor with some compromises here and there. I don't get any sense that there's that contention. I will say, I know that Councilman Seelbach sent a letter to Harry Black, the city manager, and he's brought this up during some of the hearings that if there was I believe $35 million sitting around that the mayor decided to spend, why didn't the city manager make a suggestion as to, how that money should be spent? Because it's the city manager's job to submit an entire budget.
And he addressed that Tuesday night, and his term was it wasn't ripe for spending yet.
Yeah.
So I guess it still needed to ripen on the vine more. But
how do you tell? Do you push on the end or thump on it?
And money comes out of the tomato.
That's how it smells.
But that did not pass the smell test with Councilmember Seelbach, and I think he's going to want – more information on, I can be a little bit skeptical. I still think that the manager knew, either the manager had that money in and they took it out to let the mayor introduce it, or the manager said to the mayor, there might be $37 million if you want to do something with it, mm-hmm. and then the projects. But I don't think this was done in a vacuum. Because that's too much money. I mean,
Harry didn't forget about $35 million sitting around.
And normally when the mayor makes changes to the budget, we're talking in the millions of range. I mean, like $1-2 million. But I've never seen one that is upwards of, I think altogether it's even like $37 million.
Yeah, I mean, as we said a few weeks ago, that's a humongous sum of money to be changed in the budget. So.
Jay, I know when the city manager's recommendation first came out, in the circles where I travel, I'm writing a lot about poverty and the issues that we have. And there was a lot of concern among social service agencies about cuts made in those areas. How did that work through the hearing process? Did the council members put a lot of that back?
Actually, the mayor put it back.
Mayor put it back.
And I think last year—
Jay, this is a capital budget, is that right?
Well, no, it's operating
it in capital. It is operating in capital.
What Lucy is talking about is the human services funding, and this current budget year that we're in, the human services budget was $3 million, and I think the city manager maybe cut 5% of that, but then the mayor restored it back to $3 million, and there's a possibility that there could even be another $250,000 on top of that to they focus on three things, homeless prevention, gainful employment, and they want another $250,000 for violence prevention, which could get added back. So that would give the human services budget $3.25 million.
And again, they'll have this done by June 22nd. And
That's the goal.
And goes into effect on...
It goes effect on July 1st. They have to have it done by June 30th. That's not a deadline they can float. That state law has to be in place by June 30th.
Jay, one of your favorite topics, always politics. we're about to get invaded by candidates, aren't we?
Yeah, I think the long string of candidate visits start on Monday. Well, it was surprising. Originally, when Mayor Cranley announced that presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton was coming to town, it was for a fundraiser at his house, but she was also going to do a public event.
Yeah.
And then less than 24 hours later, the public event has been canceled, but the fundraiser will still go on. And we also expect, I think WCPO.com had this, that during the NAACP convention in the middle of July, we're likely to see both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and possibly President Obama in town for that convention.
I'd be shocked if President Obama wasn't here for that.
Yeah, that'll be happening around the same time as the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. I think there's going to be an effort on the part of the Democrats to, you know, get some of the spotlight and buzz in this end of the state while the Republicans have the north end.
Yeah, I think the mayor, he told me the other day about the public event that they just weren't. They weren't sure. They had different competing signals. I don't think they ever announced a public event for Hillary.
No, they never had really announced.
They just said they might have one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But it was pretty quickly that they said, well, no, it's just going to be the fundraiser.
So Jay, what do you expect? I mean, they always say Ohio is a bellwether. Ohio is a bellwether. So are we just going to get bombarded?
Yeah,
I mean, just
we're going to be bombarded.
Because we're a bellwether.
And I was going to say, if you don't like nasty black and white slow motion TV ads, you need to move somewhere that's not near a swing state.
Or get rid of your cable.
I'm not even sure you can get away from it that way either.
Has anybody figured out the next time that we'll have a presidential campaign and the 17-year cicadas in the same cycle? Because I feel like
that
there's
makes
some
sense.
Kind of, yeah.
That makes perfectly good sense, Lucy. Have we heard anything as far as, we know Hillary Clinton's coming on Monday. Have we heard anything about when Donald Trump is planning to pay his first visit?
As far as I know, we've not heard that.
I figure he'll just pop up one day. We won't even be told beforehand.
He'll tweet it out beforehand, yeah. And he'll pop
he'll
up.
He'll land in a Trump
I'll
airplane.
Be at the, I'll be at the Glenway skyline in 5 minutes.
Here I am. But yeah, it's going to be and people may think, oh, reporters love when candidates come to town. I, for one, it's a
nightmare. You'd rather be out of town, wouldn't you?
I'd rather be out of town because you're just kind of trapped for like hours and hours and hours.
Thanks, everybody, for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Cincinnati Business Courier staff reporter and columnist Chris Wederick, WCPO.com, WCPO Insider reporter Lucy May, and WVXU City Hall reporter Jay Hanselman.